This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Military solutions of this kind cannot solve the issue. Only a political process can. The problem with a political process is I just don't see who's going to lead one.
That's Emmanuel Manyasa, an education expert based in Kenya, on the impact of teacher shortages. Details coming up. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken heads back to the Middle East. And in Kenya, Britain's King Charles has expressed regret for colonial-era abuses. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Today, more than 300 injured people and foreign nationals entered Egypt from Gaza through the Rafah crossing. Egypt has agreed to accept some injured Gazans into the country for health care and is working with foreign governments to get their citizens and their families out of Gaza. Also today, there are media reports that Israel airstrikes hit apartment buildings in the Jabalaya refugee camp near Gaza City for a second day in a row. The Hamas-run government says the strikes today caused many deaths and injuries, but there is no independent verification. As Israel's war against Hamas in response to the October 7th attack intensifies, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is preparing to return to the Middle East, heading to Israel first. Blinken spent several days in shuttle diplomacy in Israel and regional capitals. A few days after the conflict began, he made over a dozen stops in Jordan, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Egypt. He accompanied President Joe Biden to meetings with Israeli government officials, President's visit to Tel Aviv on October 18th. For more on Blinken's trip and U.S. diplomatic efforts in the conflict, we have VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain on the line. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Cindy.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
So tell us about Secretary Blinken's trip. Where will he be going?
Right. Well, as you said, he will be heading to Israel first. And so far, the State Department has just confirmed talks in Israel and Jordan. And as listeners may know, Jordan's relations with Israel have sharply deteriorated over the Gaza war and Israel's shelling of Gaza. And Jordan has recalled its ambassador from Israel. So those should be very important stops. And I was just listening to the State Department briefing, and the spokesperson, Matthew Miller, did not confirm reports that some sources are saying that Secretary Blinken also plans to go to Turkey. But so far, the State Department is only confirming the Israel and Jordan stops and saying that the trip is still in flux.
Yes, I was going to ask you about, so does he have any specific goals for his meetings with officials in Israel and other countries except, besides Turkey?
Right, exactly. Yes. Well, the State Department says that the primary objective is hearing about Israel's security needs. Also, of course, the fate of those hostages, some 250 who are still being held and still efforts going at a fever pace to try to get the hostages released, the fate of Palestinian civilians, and the U.S. wants to see the flow of aid to Gaza greatly increased. They just want to see it basically opened up and flowing consistently day after day. Apparently, there have been more trucks crossing over the border, but the U.S. wants to see more aid going into Gaza. And the State Department spokesperson, Matthew Miller, was also pretty blunt in saying that that Secretary Blinken will tell the Israelis that they need to carefully respect international humanitarian law with these strikes, realizing that they are trying to target and they are hitting Hamas militants and Hamas commanders. But we have all seen the civilian toll.
And The Biden administration's initial reaction to Hamas' October 7th attack on Israel was to offer unqualified support to the Israelis. But in more recent days, Biden, Blinken, and others have adjusted their language, meaning they're more likely now to urge Israel to avoid, like you just mentioned, hurting civilians and to more openly acknowledge the suffering of the Palestinians. You think that's the kind of message Secretary Blinken will be bringing back to the Middle East?
Yes, and I think you're right. In the beginning and after the terrible massacre, you know, there was understanding, and we had Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu embracing President Biden when he went, and the U.S., you know, made clear that it stands with Israel in the face of that terrorist attacks on civilians. But as you said, and I think behind the scenes, sort of gradually all along, the U.S. has been trying to get Israel to take the civilians into consideration, take these hostages into consideration, who, as far as we know, may be being held in these underground tunnels with the Hamas fighters. And so, yes, I think that will be very much, you know, first and foremost in the talks, as well as also, and this may be when Secretary Blinken goes to Jordan, and if he goes to other countries in the region, preventing the conflict from spreading, as we've all, you know, been watching sort of to the north of Israel to see if Hezbollah, prompted by Iran or others, if this could erupt into a wider conflict in the region.
VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
So what is the latest from where you are?
Well, you know, as you said, Israel, Hamas...
Today, the Associated Press reported Israeli airstrikes hit apartment buildings in the Jabalaya refugee camp near Gaza City for a second day in a row. The Hamas-run government says the strikes today caused many deaths and injuries, but there is no independent verification. The death toll in the conflict between Israel and Hamas continues to rise. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says close to 9,000 Gaza residents have died since fighting began in October 7th, when Hamas militants attacked several Israeli communities. Israel says more than 1,400 Israelis died in that initial attack, most of them civilians. Earlier today, I spoke with reporter Linda Granstein in Jerusalem for the latest developments. So, what is the latest from where you are?
Well, you know, as you said, Israel, Hamas says that Israel hit the hit Jabalia refugee camp for the second day in a row. Now, this refugee camp is in northern Gaza, which is the area that Israel had told civilians to flee from, and yet tens of thousands did not leave northern Gaza, either because they couldn't or because they had nowhere to go or because they believed Hamas when Hamas told them to stay. And, you know, this refugee camp is very densely populated. The buildings are not that strong. So if you're talking about an Israeli airstrike with a large bomb, you know, as you said, the death toll, we don't really know, but it seems likely that it is, you know, dozens killed, if not more than that. Just in general, I was speaking to somebody from Gaza earlier today, and they say there are perhaps thousands of bodies underneath the rubble that are not part of the death toll. So we're actually going to, whenever this ends, I think the death toll is going to be even higher than we thought.
Much higher, yes. So for the first time since the conflict began, Linda, under a Qatari mediated deal, I think, injured Palestinians have begun arriving in Egypt through the Rafah border crossing. Anything on that front?
Yeah, it's not very many. I mean, I think it's a total of 90 today. And Egypt also, for the first time, said that foreign nationals who had been stuck in Gaza since the fighting began, and dual passport holders could leave Egypt. And so by the end of the day, an estimated 400 have left and have gone to Egypt. Egypt is also building a field hospital near the Rafah border crossing. If you cross from Rafah, it's about a seven-hour drive to Cairo through the Sinai. So, you know, Egypt is now trying to help some injured Gazans, but Egypt is also very concerned about a wave of tens of thousands of refugees from Gaza who want to leave, who really have been trying to, you know, get out of the fighting, of sort of them going across the border and trying to go to Egypt. So Egypt is being very careful about this.
And lastly, Linda, there have been multiple, you know, UN agencies, the United States and other countries are asking for a humanitarian ceasefire. Will Israel heed that request?
Well, I mean, there's sort of two different things. One is a temporary pause in the fighting, which perhaps Israel might heed. But in terms of a ceasefire, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that a ceasefire would be tantamount to allowing Hamas to win, that if Israel stops now when Hamas still has military power, Hamas still is able to fire rockets and on Israel, as we saw earlier today, that, you know, it's only a matter of time before Hamas, you know, carries out another attack. So it seems that Israel is pretty much committed to getting rid of Hamas. I mean, what comes after that is another question. But I do not see Israel agreeing to a ceasefire, certainly without, you know, or even a temporary ceasefire, as long as Hamas continues to hold some 240 hostages as well.
That was journalist Linda Grantstein speaking with me from Jerusalem. President Joe Biden is facing a revolt from some members of his own Democratic Party over his unwavering support for Israel as that country expands ground operations in Gaza and Palestinian civilian casualties mount. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kusuwara has the report.
As Israeli airstrikes continue in Gaza, including this one on the Al-Shati refugee camp, an open letter to President Joe Biden from advocacy group the National Muslim Democratic Council, demanding that he broker a ceasefire by 5 p.m. Tuesday or face the consequence of millions of American Muslims withholding their support for his re-election next year. Council Chair Basim Al-Kara via Skype.
We know for a fact that our community will make a difference in the battleground states. And I think Democratic Party leaders are paying attention and they are afraid of what's happening. And they're sending messages to the White House that this is going to hurt our chances in 2024.
More than a million Muslim voters cast a ballot in the 2020 election, turning out in numbers large enough to potentially swing the presidential race in some battleground states. Muslim and Arab Americans traditionally vote for Democratic candidates, but a shift may be coming. A new poll by the Arab American Institute showed support for Biden dropped among Arab American voters from 59% in the 2020 election to 17% ahead of 2024. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We're going to continue to engaging with the Muslim community, the Arab American community, and Palestinian American leaders to hear their concerns.
In contrast, Jewish Americans are deeply appreciative of Biden's support of Israel, said Hallie Soifer, who leads the Jewish Democratic Council of America via Skype.
Israel is an important issue, remains a very important issue to Jewish voters. It's an issue about which there's a very high emotional attachment between Jewish Americans and support of Israel.
About 7 million Jews live in the U.S., the same number as in Israel. They make up 3% of the U.S. electorate. Biden is also widely praised in Israel. He has been urging Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to conduct the war following international humanitarian law to protect civilians. Jonathan Reynolds, head of the Department of Political Studies at Bar-Ilan University via Skype.
What he's saying to Israel, to help me, to help you. If you give maximum effort to fight in the right way, according to the laws of war, then it makes it easier for me to support you and get support from you in the international community and at home in America and in the Democratic Party.
Polls show more Republicans than Democrats approve of Biden's decision to send weapons to Israel. Norman Ornstein, Senior Fellow Emeritus at the American Enterprise Institute via Skype.
I do think that there isn't a lot of room for Republicans here, whether it's Trump or the Republicans in Congress, to outflank Biden on support for Israel.
Meanwhile, there's growing pressure for a ceasefire, including from anti-war protesters during Tuesday's congressional hearing. Administration officials have advocated for humanitarian pauses to allow aid to reach civilians, but say a ceasefire at this point will only benefit Hamas. Pat Suida Kuswara, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Today, Britain's King Charles met Kenyan artists and explored local art exhibits during his state visit. Earlier in the morning, Charles and Queen consort Camilla visited a cemetery for veterans of World War II. Charles' visit, his first as monarch to a former colony, comes at a time when Britain is under pressure to do more to recognize colonial-era abuses. Last night at a state dinner, he expressed regret but did not apologize for colonial-era abuses. VOA Nairobi correspondent Maria Madialo has been covering the King's visit, and we spoke earlier. First, tell us more about King Charles and the Queen Consort Camilla's activities today.
Well, today the King and the Queen Camilla basically started the day by honoring veterans at the Commonwealth War Graves Commission Cemetery. They joined British and Kenyan military personnel in basically an act of remembrance. So they were there at a cemetery located at Kiriokor. While they're there, actually, they tried basically to kind of, there was a minute of silence, and then they both made a wreath basically to honor these veterans. And while they were there, actually, there were a few veterans who are still living, including two of them, ages 104 and 104 and 117 years old. So those veterans were actually there basically to receive medals that some of them lost for whatever reason. And the King was there to replace those medals today. So after that, they actually headed to many different places. They went to the UN, but another place they went to was Karura Forest, which is an urban forest basically in the heart of the city of Nairobi. It was to highlight the role of green spaces in cities. And you are not going to believe who joined him. No other than Kenyan famous Kenyan marathon runner, Eliud Kipchoge. Okay. So Kipchoge was there as one of the people to help flag off a race. He was also there because he did a forest walk with Wangari Maathai's daughter, who accompanied him. But another highlight of the Karura Forest thing was that he got a help from a 10-year-old girl who had written to Buckingham Palace, basically asking the King if he could plant a tree with her, and the King agreed, and there she was. So she was there as well at Karura Forest today with the King.
So, Mariama, Britain's tarnished colonial past is taking center stage in Kenya this week. And as you well know, many citizens of former British colonies, including leaders of Kenya's Nandi people, want Charles to go further by directly apologizing and endorsing reparations for colonial-era abuses, including torture, killings, and widespread expropriation of land, much of which remains in British hands. So how was that message by the King accepted over there in his speech yesterday?
The feeling I've been hearing and the feeling I've been seeing the past few days have been mixed. I think, like President Ruto said, it is a first step, and people like him, respect King Charles for at least acknowledging some of those atrocities and some of the wrongdoings that were done during colonialism. But at the same time, you have many, many others. There are lots of organizations, activists, and just, you know, I think I mentioned in one of my pieces yesterday about the Kenyan Human Rights Commission, who had actually sent a 10-page letter to the UK High Commissioner here in Nairobi, basically, you know, asking for answers, asking, basically making the cases for reparations, for acknowledgement, and an apology. So you have a mixed bag of, you know, some people do say that maybe it's time to move on. They didn't want, you know, some of these issues to overshadow the visit, the King's visit here. But at the same time, you've had activists who have tried to even do protests, who have not been able to do so because the police have basically tried to disperse and things like that. Many people, I think, as President Ruto said, it's a first step for him to come and acknowledge and kind of accept what was happening during colonialism.
That was Mariama Diallo reporting from Nairobi. Recently, military coups in Africa are posing a direct challenge to civilian-led democratic governance on the continent. Some analysts believe these coups reflect the ambitions of militaries in some countries to reclaim their perceived entitlement to ruling. Poland Diho has more.
During a recent Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing in Washington,
five nations in the region are suffering coups since 2020. This includes Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Chad, and most recently, Niger. Mali and Burkina Faso have actually had two coups. At the same time, there has been an alarming increase in terrorist attacks by militant Islamist organizations.
The West African regional bloc, ECOWAS, is facing significant challenges in dealing with the rise of coups in the region, as highlighted by Moses Kihisa, an associate professor of political science and Africana studies at North Carolina State University.
One of the things that the African Union has been doing, for which it deserves credit, is that every time there is a coup, every time there is an unconstitutional change of government using force, the African Union promptly suspends that country from its membership to the body.
The Sahel region has experienced a rise in jihad insurgency affiliated with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. These militant Islamist threats are spreading across Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Chad.
But it's important for the United States to take a principled stance when coups occur. We need to lead with our values as we try to advance an agenda of good governance in the region. I think we need to make our position crystal clear. Military takeovers of civilian-led governments are coups.
Some analysts say these coups are increasing the risks of insecurity and political instability. In Mali, jihadist militants are once again targeting Timbuktu. However, unlike a decade ago, when French and US troops halted the insurgent advance, Mali's military junta has limited options for support. The U.S. and France suspended aid and military assistance and training in response to the coups. A surge in insurgent attacks in Mali and Burkina Faso has been attributed to the expulsion of French troops by military rulers in those countries. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.